welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Hey, Paddy, welcome back to the podcast. Good to see you again.
Hey, Scott, long time no speak. How you doing, mate?
Well, compared to the last times we didn't speak for ages, it's good to see you after just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so
I'm going to give a quick bit of background to this for people that are listening and potentially watching. If this goes as well as it should go, they'll be watching as well. When we spoke a couple of weeks back and you were kind enough to do another podcast with us, all around positional play, I think we spoke probably just as long before and after that we did for the actual recording of the podcast episode. And what came to fruition for me was, you know, just what a wonderful talent and knowledge you have around the game and how we could potentially tap into more of that, because the podcast, you know, scratched the surface on some of these things, but having the opportunity to talk further with you just meant like I'm missing out on too much stuff. I need to get more Paddy. So what we said we would try and do is find a way in which we could take a bit more of a deeper dive into some topics, and, you know, really just push ourselves, or certainly push me, to ask better questions and challenge you a bit around some of like the principles of play and some of the way in which teams set themselves up and organize themselves and really get a bit deeper into the tactics. Does that sound like a fair analysis of where we've got to and why we're here?
It does, mate. And I've had people reach out as well, people that sort of work with me and people I don't know that have said they just really enjoyed that kind of, you know, we only touched on things in passing. They're like, well, but we love that. Well, tell us a little bit more about it. And then you and I sort of started kicking the idea around and said, well, let's give it a go. So I think that's a very fair description.
Brilliant. Well, we've had to do, like I said, a bit more presentable because the cameras are on as well for this one, not just the audio, so I can't be a picking my nose and stuff. I try and stay professional. But look, what we are is still just us having a chat about some football-related stuff, right? That's not carried away. That's what we're going to try and do here, but try and layer some of these things in. So I can ask all the silly questions that I don't know the answer to, and you can try your best to pretend I'm not a Wally and try and answer them the best you can and see where we land. And well, look, who knows what topics we might do moving forward, but for today, like I was keen to pick up on something you spoke about on the podcast episode, which is kind of all about building out from the back and also lines in some of your macro principles that you've got, and one specifically. So if you don't mind, Paddy, just tee us up with what we're going to look into for this deep dive episode.
So, yeah, I think deep dive is a great way of saying it. We briefly touched on towards the end of the podcast last time, movements from off the ball players that provide the structure that allow the overall team intention to be delivered, right? I would suggest that you spend the most amount of time in the game, especially if your team is, you know, if Barcelona can hold the ball pretty much wherever they want, Man City the same. A lot of teams, you know, they'll hold it for a bit and then the other team gets it as a shot, as a missed shot, as a through ball that gets swept up by the goalkeeper. I think it's fair to say you spend a lot of time in zone one of your field, right? Which is your kind of build out phase, your initiation of play. So we said, let's have a little look at that. Let's have a look at some of off the ball movements. Let's have a look at some of the cat and mouse games that are played between both the pressing team or the defending team and the team that's trying to build out. And, you know, we said we just get into it and see what happens. So I think that's what we're going to do, right?
Perfect. Okay, excellent. And just a little bit more then before we go into it. I know you've kindly done some research. You tried to find a clip or two around the stuff that best illustrates this. And we're going to look at the clip. We're going to look at it a few times. You're going to talk us through some of the stuff that you see. I'll ask some questions around it, I'm sure. We'll get a feel for it in practice. And then, if you don't mind, we'll go to the tactics board and talk through it a bit more. And then I guess most important to some extent is like, okay, that's great, but, you know, my team's not Barcelona, you know, and we're under 14s and train once a week and play on a Saturday. But if I want to have some of these things for, you know, the team that I coach, how might I go about that? And we can talk about maybe some of those things we can take away. Does that sound good?
It does. I think this clip is very good. So obviously everything we use is going to be high level because we, you know, that's the stuff that's available to us to pull down off the internet and whatnot. But I think that the good thing about this clip is it's of general application, right? I mean, I wouldn't say you're going to run this with your U7s, but your U14 team, I think everything that we're going to talk about here, a normal travel U14 team can do. It's just a matter of, do they want to? Do you have enough time to get to it? But I don't think anything here is super, super high level that it can't be used by the masses.
Brilliant. Okay. And I think that's part of the challenge, right, Paddy, isn't it? It's like, you know, I spend a lot of time on the podcast trying to say to everyone, look, it's kids' football. It's not professional football. You know, you see the difference. And now I'm here trying to relate Barcelona to under 14's team. But the reality is, you know, there's nothing wrong with looking at what great looks like, right?
No,
and, you know, and
all.
Finding, okay, how can I realistically, age appropriately, include some of this stuff in my practices? And I think sometimes as coaches, the challenge isn't the fact, you know, that we don't recognize that, okay, the levels we can realistically get to. But, you know, how do we even get some of these things in there? How do we, you know, don't just watch a clip from Pep Guardiola's video for 5 minutes on how he's got a session going with the Man City players, but how do I put that into, you know, into my team? And that's the challenge, right? And that's what we're going to try and help with if we can. Or when I say we, I mean you.
And if, no, we'll work through this together, mate. But I think you're absolutely right. Is if you think that the only difference between your U14 team and Pep's Man City or Flick's Barcelona is the quality of the player and the amount of time they spend working on something.
Yeah.
Because I know everyone says Pep reinvented football. Not really. Nothing he's done is, you can't patent it. You can't copyright it. It's all stuff that anyone could have done and anyone can do, right? Giving goes out wide, exploiting the half space, you know, trying to get numerical superiority behind the first line of defensive pressure. These are not super, super high level concepts. They take more time and effort to do. And we talked about this on the last podcast, and just throwing down a few cones again, well, let's do a passing pattern, let's do this, let's do that. None of this stuff is inapplicable. It's probably the level of application, right? So you're not going to do all of this with a U8 team, but are you going to look at numerical superiority with a U8 team? Well, I should hope so. Otherwise you're asking them to dribble 1v1 every time. Right, yeah. you need some 2v1s there, don't you? 3v2s, you need to find some space, and right, so it's just how you scale it up or scale it down. So I think this is a great little endeavor that we're starting on. I hope it does well, and I think it should be of use to most coaches.
Well, as always with these things, Paddy, it's purely selfish. I'm going to learn loads. That's all I care about.
It's one
of my benefits. Where it goes beyond that, we'll see. If you don't mind, just a quick reminder then about what we're going to look at. But also more importantly, your macro principles and where it might feed into that. Because I know a lot of this stuff, you've been kind enough to think about what you do in your full-time work and how some of this could correlate across. Where does it line into your macro principles? And, you know, where's the dovetail in there?
So this is, building out the back, initiation of playing zone one, the macro principle that applies loosely. So the macro principle is my macro principle. It's not Barcelona's macro principle, right? Their one will be something different that I will never find out, right? Because no one's ever going to tell me. But it looks fairly similar. And it was essentially find the free man in a defensive line to carry the ball out into zone two or into midfield. So what happens is, and we're not going to look at a bunch of clips, and we're only going to look at a specific part of this clip, is they circulate with the ball and they probe with the ball to unbalance the defensive line, right? To provide some degree of space to either one of their center backs, or if they have a six or a pivot dropping back in to, you know, between the two, to pick the ball up and then carry that ball out into space. Particularly what I liked about this clip is the relationship and the effect of all the little, what you might call micro relationships between one and two, you know, pairs of players and threes of players, rather than the overall team intention. And I think it's really telling that without any of these micro relationships, let's call it that, because I can't think of a better phrase, I don't believe, Scott, that much of the other stuff happens any better than would happen on your U14 team or my U10 team at the weekend. I think it is the detail, as I said, the devil's in the detail. I think you see that in this clip.
Brilliant. Okay, perfect. All right. Well, so what we'll do, if it's okay, I'll try and be quiet, at least for a couple of times. If you don't mind sharing your screen, and we'll put it on, and you can talk us through what game it is, how recent it is, Maybe we'll just play the clip out. Oh, is it only 15 seconds thing you said it was? So we'll just
Very
play it
short
out.
clip, but we can scrub back and forwards through it a few times
And let's
and
wash it
show
out.
the
So we'll
viewers
watch it
the
once
highlights.
or twice without me saying anything really too much. And then we'll talk through the clip for those that are just listening that maybe not have the visual or just audio version. Then we'll talk to what we can see. And then we'll break it down if that's okay.
That sounds great. So I'll just set the scenes. This is Barcelona versus Mallorca. Very recent. I can't remember if this is from the weekend, but Rashford Evans is Marcus Rashford, sorry, is on the field. So it's got to be the last, five or six games because he's only been there for a little while. Barcelona are going from right to left. They are in the yellow kit. And what you see at the moment is I've picked the video up where the left fullback has the ball and he's facing his own goal. He's under pressure and he's about to drop it back to his goalkeeper to recycle play.
It's about the halfway line, isn't it? So it's quite a long way back from goal.
About the halfway line, quite far out from goal, but Barcelona's way, right? Not to be afraid of playing in your own half. You might not want to play in your own half, but not being afraid to do it. To pull, and we all know this, right? To pull those red jerseys out of their half into Barcelona's half to then give Barcelona numerical superiority and space in that second half when they finally do get past them. So if you talk about principles and stuff, you might say we're about to enter like a stabilization phase where Barcelona are going to adapt their nice shape, their width, their depth, their pivots in between the lines. To then draw out that press to then accelerate into the next phase. So stabilize to accelerate might be something. If I was on Hansi Flick's speed dial, he might let me know that that's one of the things he's doing in this clip, but I think he is. All right, Scott. So do you want me to have a look at the clip now, mate?
Yeah, please, buddy. Yeah,
Yeah.
let's have a
All
look.
right, and we can watch it a few times and I'll scrub it and pause it and all that kind of stuff. Here we go.
I was looking at the possibilities in the bench for Mallorca as a defender. There's only David López who's
And that is it, right? So the people at home, I think, let's have a look at it one more time. Why is Paddy getting so excited about this clip? Let me show him one more time and then I'll walk everyone through why.
So the right back's passing back to the keeper. Two centre backs. The keeper plays to one of the centre backs. Centre back is going to play into the midfielder who drops in.
I was looking at the possibilities in
Midfielder
the
plays
bench
back out wide
for
to
Mallorca as
the
a
left
defender.
back.
There's only David López who's a
And
very
that's
good
it.
video.
And then we're on to
So
another
what are
clip.
you seeing in there then, Paddy, that gets you excited?
And it's not like I'm particularly high level or I see something that no one else does. It's just that I work in this environment where I'm looking at these little micro clips of 15 seconds all day, every day, trying to put stuff together for coaches that work for me at the club I work for. So that's all it is. I'm kind of privileged to what most people might see over the course of a 6 week period. I'll cram that all into like 2 days. I'll get like, 150 clips of Barcelona building out the back or Man City pressing or whatever it is, Arsenal playing through the middle of the field. So I just see things that not everyone gets the opportunity to see. Not that I'm particularly gifted at seeing it. But so I'm going to turn the volume down here so you and I can talk.
Well, Paddy, just now,
So,
just so you know,
yeah.
this isn't me, just blowing smoke, I promise you. But, I think don't underestimate, I've done this for a little while now, but I won't see the things you see still. I'm still learning to have that eye about it. So this is really helpful for me because, you will pick up things I won't have noticed. And the only way that I can support my players, is if I can see the things myself. I guarantee this will be helpful because, even if I think I've seen 8% of stuff you've seen, which I may or may not do, there are different bits that I won't have seen that you'll see. So, the more you can pick out how you see this clip, the better it'll be for everybody, but particularly for me.
Well, I appreciate that, mate. And I think back at you as well. I'm looking at I have a very predefined way of how I want to play or how I want my coaches to coach or how I want their players to play. So I'm quite sure I miss a lot of things as well, through inherent biases and things like that. But I think many eyes, make things a lot easier and throw up some good information for everyone to use. So hopefully coaches at home, right, because we're pausing it and stopping it and slow-moing it, they'll start to see things that you and I won't even see. Maybe they can drop us a note to let us know what they see as well. But absolutely. So you got the fullback playing the ball back here, right? So nothing crazy. But what you see this player here starts to open up into that. Even if he isn't the fullback, doesn't matter what position you are, right? It's about the kind of rational occupation of space. What spaces need to be filled? So he kind of pushes out into that right fullback slot. This player here drops out into what would be the right centre-back slot. This player here drops into what would be the left centre-back slot. And then the left fullback that dropped the ball back opens up and regains a little bit of his height that he just lost from travelling towards his own goal. And I think it's important to say here that the press is not that aggressive, actually. So the Barcelona team have read that, and the mindset is already, you know, they're not at panic stations, right? They're not anticipating four people press them in their own box. So you could, they're kind of jogging at the moment. They're not like going hell for leather at it. The goalkeeper gets the ball. The quality of the video is not so good that you can see, but he's scanning, obviously. He's looking at space, teammates, rivals, and the ball to see where he needs to play it. If we roll it forward a little bit right now, everyone's in position. You can see that horseshoe shape there, right? Two fullbacks, two centre-backs. You can also see there's a line of three pressing, inverted commas, players here. You've got the seven, not sure what that is, maybe 11, and then maybe 10, right? So you've got one player kind of pressing as a nine, and then two wingers in behind him. It's like a triangle press there. Keeper's spotted that both centre-backs are open, but obviously the ball came from the left-hand side. Depends which way you're looking at it. It came from his left fullback, so he's kind of chosen to go out the other side where there's a little bit more space. You can see all this space here where I'm just rolling the mouse over here now. Okay, and the ball gets played there. Now, this is for me where it gets interesting, because you see you've got four players off, four possessing players. You've got those three players inside of them pressing. And really, you've got a five versus three if you include the goalkeeper. That's not bad odds for a pressing team, right? Playing reasonably close to goal. So as the pressing team right now, I feel happy and comfortable. But what I think you notice is they start to have a little look around. If we wind it back a few seconds, if you look at the red three here, as soon as a goalkeeper receives the ball, the first thing they do is look over their shoulder to see who's behind them. And I think really what they're looking at is to see what Barcelona players are behind them. Let's roll it forward a few seconds. You'll see those scans, all three of them there. The one in the middle is the slowest, but there you go. So just that is little micro nod. And what they see is not great, right? It doesn't fill them with confidence. What they see is Barcelona are very, very well structured to be able to come out of this unscathed. So let's have a quick look. We've got the two fullbacks, the two centre-backs and the goalkeepers. We've got our five. We've got our three pressings. We've got our five versus three. We've also then got two. We've got Frankie de Jong here as your pivot. And then you've got two interiors there. I think that's Pedri at the top. I can't quite see who the number eight is. I don't think it's Gavi, but they've got a six and eight and a 10 or a six and two eights. So you've got a really nice setup there. Now what happens is when you look at, let's play it forward now, the centre-back's going to carry out. Now, if you look at the three players here versus the four Barcelona players, they're almost in a straight line. They're on top of each other. But then eventually the red team, Mallorca, recognise it's not on. The press isn't on. Barcelona start to drop unopposed. Look at all the space they're in. If that was a real press, if they were really going after that, these centre-backs wouldn't be able to receive the ball 10 yards outside of their box with 15 yards of space. They'd have pressure on them right away. So they realise, and if you look at the red team, that they just start to walk back. Okay? Come back. They start to walk back. So they started here, and they end up inside or just level with the top of the center circle. Now, as this center back carries the ball up, if we just pause it there, if you can see my mouse is just circling the, let's call him the left winger, because I think in this press that's what he is. If you look at his body shape and if you look at his head movements and you look at his hand signals, he's trying to encourage the ball carrier to dribble out, to carry out. He's also trying to tell his mate here, number 20, that he should probably be the one that jumps to put the pressure on him. Because, and this is where, for me, the nerd comes out, right? This is this kind of analyst in me. So where I get a little bit excited. If this player jumps, and this is not rocket science, right? But when it happens at real speed, at 11v11, right? 22 variables on a 110-yard pitch. It's hard to catch everything, which is why we're lucky to have video tools nowadays. Imagine doing this on paper and pen back in the day on VHS or whatever. This guy here, if he jumps the left wing, then you've given a 2v1 easy out, right? As he gets to about here, he's going to play that pass. Now, if you look, the next possible defender is pinned by the interior here. He's not going to jump. So if this guy jumps to here and they play that pass in here, he's going to carry the ball out all the way up to, you know, until a line of engagement appears, and that might be top of the box. You never know, right? Until they start stop defending backwards and they realize they have to kind of make a little stand. So you see this guy ushering with hand movements, number 20, to make the jump, because then you've got one-on-one with the ball. You've got the winger on the fullback, and you've got this player here who can shape play. So even though we started by saying we've got 5v3, realistically, what's this player here going to do if everything goes according to plan, which it doesn't? He's going to shape his run in here like that, a kind of like a gentle curve to remove the left center back and the left fullback from being available. So what was a 5v3 would become a 1v1 here, a 1v1 here, and a 1v1 here. It would become a 3v3. Right, and that's a different story. Unless you play backwards now to the spare, the free man who is the goalkeeper in possession going forward, it's a 3v3. So they don't want that. So they're trying to usher this guy, or the red team do want that. Barcelona don't want that. They're trying to usher the red guy to jump here. And we roll it forward, we'll roll it back a touch. If you watch number 10 now, he's looking over his shoulder. He knows exactly what's going on. He starts to tell his teammate to, there's a little hand gesture. If you caught it, look, he's saying, go on, push on. He doesn't. Frankie de Jong drops a little bit to become open. Right now, it's really tight. Now you've got what were kind of three well-positioned defenders covering a decent amount of pitch, and that all crushed in here. They're all within touching distance, okay? Which is exactly what Barcelona want. They've used the ball to attract pressure, which has released space everywhere else, basically. Now, if you see, I want to say this is Pedri up here, right? He is looking directly at that game center and direct cooperation space here. This is your little rondo, basically. They don't use it necessarily, but this is what starts to form a little rondo. He's looking right at it because he knows now it's 3v3, something's got to give. So if we rolled it forward again, as this guy here eventually jumps a little bit too late because he follows Frankie de Jong in, you see Pedri step off his man. But watch how he steps off. He doesn't just drift. This is like pre-planned. He's probably looking at it from about here. He jets. He just turns it on because he knows he's got to generate a little bit of separation between himself and the player marking, right, which is probably a centre-back because I think that's the full-back there. That's the winger. That's the centre-back. That's the 8 or the 10. He sprints towards the ball carrier. Oh, sorry. I messed that up. Heel it. There it is. And picks that ball up there. Now, my only criticism here is the nerve on me, right? But my only criticism is here, I probably would have played the third man and brought this player into the game and released him here, because then he could have kind of trotted up the touchline and it would have been 2v1 against the fullback here. Pedri's turned in, but I'm sure he's got a very good reason why he's doing that and would tell me to shut up, right, in my own business. But if I was coaching my team, I might say, well, make sure we're aware that you've got that bounce pass. We've gone from here into here, and I might have just bounced it out there and had this guy carry the ball up. Pedri's not done that. So if we wind it back now, look at all the, let's look at, now let's look at all the things that are going on. So as the ball starts to get carried up, the red team had such a good coverage and they gave it all up and just dropped and walked away because they knew Barcelona was so well set up. If I just take the play button off the thing, you've got all these players here appearing in passing lanes, pockets of space, stepping off defenders, right? You've got width, you've got depth, you've got everything, right? You've got nice control of the ball. And they know that if they jump at the wrong time, they're going to be responsible for allowing Barcelona to break that press. So this is why I really like this clip, Scott. If we wind it back one more time, watch Pedri step off. He shoots off to receive that ball because, look, he's matched up. He's matched up. And these two are matched up. So something's got to give. Well, it does. It gives in the way, in the shape of Pedri dropping off, loses his marker beautifully. Nice pass. And what's really impressive is this isn't off the cuff play, right? This is, you know, much as we work on the nuance of it, it's never the same thing. You work on something in practice, you do it a million times. Chaos theory, complex systems, everything tells you it would never be exactly the same. Nevertheless, this is clearly a pattern, isn't it? They're in a centre-back carry, right? They understand that their obvious receivers are marked up. So someone has to drop from a higher line and the ball carrier is absolutely looking and scanning forward for that higher line player, right? His pass is perfectly timed. It's not as if the run was made and then 3 seconds later he makes a pass. They all know it's coming. They're teeing it up and it comes together. It coalesces perfectly there. Now, if on another day, Frankie de Jong is slightly more open, the third man pass comes in there. And another day, this player, the third man pass goes in there. And I think they play out through a third man pass, actually. But that, for me, Scott, is just brilliant. And what's happened as well is you force a centre-back to jump to midfield line now when the rest of his teammates are probably, I mean, what's that, 15 yards behind him? They're now 3v3 at the back because there's a winger up here, which we can't see on the camera angle. Where it was 4v3 in defence with a plus one in defence, it's now 3v3 with numerical parity. And you've also got players here that can just now dismark into these spaces, right? Frankie de Jong's already starting to turn and make a run. Let's have a look at 8 and 21 as that ball's played and see what their thoughts might be. So if you look at 8 now, look how deep he is. Look at Frankie de Jong, how deep he is. Where do they end up? Let's have a little look. So 8's now already going. And then there we go on to the next. I haven't got enough film footage on this clip, but we go on to the next one. But you can see where what might happen if they hadn't played out this particular way. If they'd play one of the third men in, you've got nothing but space and you've got a back line now that can't afford to throw anyone forward to jump now because it's 3v3 at the back. So for me, that's a lovely little bit of nuance there. You can have a look at all the little micro scans. Everyone knows what's about to happen except poor Mallorca. They get sucked into it. Then the flip side of that is if the centre-back doesn't jump and he doesn't follow him, then Pedri gets one of the most dangerous players in the world, I think massively underrated in the Ballon d'Or standard this year, receives the ball on a halfway line unopposed. And we know what kind of danger he can be. I think he really reminds me of like a Xavi and a Paul Scholes and an Iniesta kind of all mixed into one. I think he's a phenomenal player. So, yep, little bit longer than I thought I'd be on that 15-second clip there, Scott, but there you have it.
Awesome, Paddy. Well, it just shows you how much you can get out of literally just 15 seconds of a clip where, you know, the ball doesn't really even have to cross the halfway line, but there's so much going on there. Thanks, Paddy. And I appreciate those that may be just listening, although, you know, hopefully you can watch it on the video. But if you just listen, hopefully you're getting the picture in your head of what's going on because Paddy did set it out at the beginning there. But what was quite interesting, a couple of things that I picked up on. You mentioned about the Rondo there, but really that was essentially became like a 5v5 little match, didn't it? In that little section of the pitch.
Yep.
There's 5v5 there going on. It's like how do we get past, you know, on a 5v5, four players on the outside and a 1v1 in the middle. But a couple of things for me. So the first thing I thought about was the keeper starting position. Now, I know all keepers now are out for players with gloves on, so they can all play really good with their football. But clearly, the keeper was expecting the pass to come back straight away. So there was something there, which got me thinking about, okay, Paddy, in here, we hear the word triggers quite a lot. So just from me, and obviously, you're not going to know exactly what the Barcelona triggers are, but if you're looking at that clip now, what kind of things do you think the players are looking at, and what triggers would they motivate them to make those choices? Because they've not gone a high ball over the top in behind, or they've not gone played out to the right fullback. What kind of things do you think they might be thinking about with regards to triggers?
So, mate, great question. I would say the centre back there is looking for a few things, right? Because there are an infinite amount of things you can look for. To make it viable to learn it as a player, you have to reduce it down, right? You can't be freestyling it and playing it off the cuff at all moments of the game, because there's so much information you would start to, like, it's when you've got like 50 windows open on your computer, it will just start to shut down and chug along. So the coach has to simplify it, right? And that's one of the reasons why you have game models and phases of play and to help you with these triggers. I would say right now he's probably looking for at least three things, and I would say that is or four things. How much space has he got in front of him? Is he free to carry? Yes or no, right? Binary decision. The answer is yes, he carries. Great. If I know I can carry, I should then probably start to look at space. When that space runs out, what do I then do? So probably going to be a pass. So is that pass sideways to his, let me take the play button off there. Is that pass sideways to his centre back colleague? Is it diagonally forward to his fullback, or is it straightforward to a player from midfield dismarking? Is it straightforward to a player from the forward line dismarking, or is it straightforward over the top? And sorry, when I say dismarking, I mean dismarking to support, or is it straight over the top of the defensive line to a player dismarking to rupture? The triggers are probably, am I matched up? And right now, like you said, I think you said you saw a 5v5 game, and my eyesight's not as good as yours, but I can definitely see the 3v3. So right now, I'm a
And
centre
I'm
back.
including
I'm not
the other side of the halfway line, just the other two, but near where the ref are, so other side of the ref. So you've
that
kind of got, you see, so I see a little section there, it becomes a bit of a
far. Right.
5v5.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, I see that now. So he's thinking maybe to himself, oh, I know I play for Barcelona, but I'm not Lamine Yamal. My footwork ain't the best. I probably don't want to be messing around with tricks and flicks and turns 3v3. So I am looking for a pass. I'm looking for an offload at some point. He's probably then looking forward, right? First look should be forward. What's the best option? Well, at the back at this point, I think we were 4v3 in favor of Mallorca until this player dismarked to support. So we might be thinking, if I play one over the top, they've got enough numbers to deal with it. A couple can drop, a couple can stay. They can pick up the second ball if there is one. I might just give the ball away there. So he probably is looking for a 20-yard forward pass into midfield, into zone two, I would say. And that macro principle or those principles would jive with what I would want here as well. The trigger, I think, is that sprint from who I think is Pedri, checking off of his player, getting that separation from his defensive mark.
Paddy,
Because
on
if
that
that
one, can I
pass
just
is
say
too slow,
quickly, like
yeah.
what for me, one of the best points in that clip is just his little movement backwards where he goes. Well, actually, that freeze frame there is pretty good because you can't actually see it, but the Mallorca, the player with the red shirt on, is on the back foot when he literally is walking backwards still as the Barcelona player goes forward. And it's I say to players all the time, first movement for the opponent, second movement for you, and the boys listen to it and nod it, but they never do it. But that's a great example of how you buy yourself 3 or 4 yards, right? And not you haven't got to be quick, but if you've got the guy pulling backwards, you go forwards. It's a great example of how if you want to create 5 yards of space, all you've got to do is that one little step backwards. I say all you've got to do is that. It's hard and it looks, but a great example of good movement, right?
So, mate, this is what we were talking about at the beginning of the video. We're looking at different things here, and you saw that, right? So in my vernacular, in what we in the concepts, that's what we call a double movement. So the double movement can be dynamic, right? But quite often the first movement, I like the way you described it as well. One, would you say one for the opposition, one for me or something,
Yeah, first for
is
them, second for
the
you.
first for them, second for you. Exactly the same thing. The first movement is a drift, right? Because you're the amount of work and research that goes into these things, but basically the first movement is a drift because on an evolutionary scale, right? When we're all hunter gatherers, your eyes are set up to detect fast movements. So you kind of drift, to almost drift out of their subconscious or out of their consciousness.
Relax them down a little bit, right? And take them the opposite way.
That's it. And like you say, love having this video. If you look there, he's probably 3 yards over the halfway line. But when you roll it forwards, he gets to about 5 yards over the halfway line. So he's cleared out. I mean, his positioning is good to start, right? His positioning has given him that space. The movement on top of that has given him an extra 2 or 3 yards to receive in. And then maybe, and that's if the defender stops dead in his tracks a second he sprints. He might not do. He might be halfway for a step and off balance and whatever, and then accelerates away. Look at that. In fact, there you go. What a great clip. What a great freeze frame. The acceleration and the separation he causes buys him that 3 or 4, probably by the time he gets it, that 4 yards of space that a top-level player can kill you with.
Yeah.
Can absolutely pull you apart. And what happens here is we have a little principle here as well. It's not a hard and fast rule, but maybe after a line-breaking pass like you've got here, is you have a little switch of play, and it doesn't have to be a full switch. It might just be across a channel, because you're getting exactly this. You're going to get hammered from behind. As soon as you drop to receive a line break, you're going to have a man on you, and he takes the touch because he's got the time and the ability to do it, and he plays a little switch across probably two or three channels. But we have that as a little macro principle as well, to sort of disperse, or a sub principle rather, to disperse that pressure that you get from dismarking to receive a line breaking pass. So all of these things together, mate, for a 15-second clip, which ostensibly on the cover of it, on the face of it, just looks like no pressure, centre-back carrying, forward. Yeah. But look at all the little games within games that are going on to make that happen. And we haven't even talked about, I mean, this freeze frame does it there as well. If you look at Lamine Yamal pinning the fullback there, the striker there, I think that's Ferran Torres, I'm not sure, pinning two centre backs, and then there'll be a winger here just off shot pinning one. So you've got now three pinning four. So if you take that and you add their goalkeeper into it, the Mallorca goalkeeper into it, three players are holding five defensive players. With all other things being equal, that gives you a +2 in midfield somewhere. Now it might not be equal, right? Depends how many they're pressing. Have we brought our centre backs up? Blah, 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 blah. But you can see these little games to generate space and numerical superiority in what looks like just a centre-back dawdling up the field with the ball.
Yeah. Paddy, can I ask you a question? The Real Mallorca's number 10. I don't know. If you go back a little bit to when the ball's played in, I think the 10's done a good job here, because I think what he's done is, I get the impression that, who receives the ball? Is it Rodri receives? Who receives the ball?
I think it's Pedri, mate. I think it's Pedri.
But let's say it is. I wonder if he's looking to play a little round the corner pass here towards the centre circle to the Barcelona number 6. But the 10 stays with the 6, what I can see, to stop that happening. I could be completely wrong here. But the 10's not just switching off. I think, to give some credit to the team out of possession, which is why maybe they end up making a different decision, because I think the 10 does their job, is my guess. But Barcelona still will then have a plan B, right? It's not like, okay, that's not worked, so we lost the ball and then now it's a transition to deal with. Right. They've actually, in that split second, they've said, right, that's not going to be happening now. So we've got our next move's going to be this. And back to your points about the layers upon layers of stuff here. It's not like there's one plan here, and if one doesn't play out, then we just give the ball away. It's like, no, then we go to the next plan, which is this. But you might see it differently. But have a little look and see if you think the 10 does his job, or am I overseeing things here?
I'm looking at it now, mate, and I think it goes back to what we said at the beginning, how we're looking for different things, or we're looking for the same thing, but we see different things. If you remember at the very beginning of the clip, I said, if this was me and my team, I'd be, how dare I, but I'd be a bit annoyed that he hadn't played the third man. Well, so you're talking about the 10 here, sat on, Frankie de Jong, who is their 6, their pivot. That's the third man, right? So it's up. So first attacker, second attacker checking off this marking to support, creating space. Third attacker would be Frankie de Jong, third man could be Frankie de Jong, or the third man could have been that fullback there if he'd won. But what happened is, I blamed the attackers, right? I said none of them have won their space from the defenders. You've looked at it the other way and gone, well, maybe the defender didn't let him, didn't give up the space for the attacker, and he stayed with him. And what's interesting about that is, Scott, is only last night I was watching a hour presentation from a guy at Arsenal, Molina, and he talked about one of their principles. I think it was just a sub-principle, but it was how to defend the give and go. And although this isn't quite a give and go, the third man pass here is not that different from a give and go, right? You're having to track a runner that is trying to get in behind you to get that ball back. And in this case, Frankie de Jong. And so you might say, if you're an analyst looking at Mallorca here defensively, their defensive shape, what they do out of possession, you might say that defending the give and go, defending the third man. Now, as we talk, right, so this is what you and I, and this is off camera, and this might be not of great interest to all the viewers, all the listeners here, but we said, didn't we, that as we talk through things here, we're not trying to come out and say we're the arbiter of all knowledge. We're saying we're learning as we go with this. And that's something that I'm thinking of now, is that's probably knowing that you're playing Barcelona, who are maybe the team in the world that are most famous for the free man and the third man. Do you have to have a sub-principle in place to defend the third man? Probably, yeah. And you might be seeing that in action, Scott, with what you noticed about number 10 on Frankie de Jong. So 100%.
Well, also, I thought it was when the guy received the ball after his sharp little movement, I think he's looking for that little round the corner. It's like he's looking for it. But yeah. What? And look, these are why they're elite football players, right? That player's been able to potentially, if I've got that right, and I may not have got it right, but if I have got it right, he's potentially in a split second be able to have made that movement, had an action in his mind it wanted to do, seen it hasn't, can't come off because actually the defender's done the right thing or what for whatever reason, and then repurposed his action in the moment to do their, you know, to do a second principle, if you like. When that shows you, like, you know, just how hard it is to be a top player, right? Because that's not easy to do, is it? You know, with everything on you, to be able to make those split second decisions, you know, and not just him, obviously the whole team are on the same page, aren't they, you'd imagine, which is why they managed to retain possession.
And this is anecdotal, right? I'm not throwing science or facts or stats or anything at you, but two things on what you just said there is, one, if you look at his face now on the freeze frame, he's clearly looking at, I would say he's looking at Frankie de Jong 21, and he's looking at number 8, and I can't see who number 8 is, to see if he can play that round the corner, or I would say that third man, right? First man, second man, third man. And then the other thing is, you talk about he's adjusted in the moment. Well, I would say that comes from, so there's lots of debates around, there's something called relationism, which is, I don't think it's nearly as big as some people try and make out, and people that sort of shove it down your throat because they're kind of new to it. And they think it's something. I think it is something for some teams. I don't think you see it very often. But there's a lot of debate about game models versus relationism, or game models being related to positional play versus relationism, and how players can really be free within a game model. And again, this is, I'm not trying to steal his point. I thought this anyway. But again, I was watching this documentary last night, this presentation, sorry, and Melina is saying, look, only really true freedom comes from a structure. And you hear that in other walks of life, not just football. You need boundaries to let you know what even is possible. And I think, like you said there, so he's gone for the third man off of a penetrating pass, which is an absolute, that's structured, right? That is a game model that is straight out of Barcelona's build-up phase book, but it hasn't worked because the player that he would have played to, the inside one is defended, the outside one hasn't read it right away and has not got in position. That's probably why he didn't play it. If you look at it now, the fullback is too low. The fullback should be where the FIFA 26 sign meets the VBET sign. He should probably be around there, right, to get that layoff, and he's not. So Pedri's had to come up with something else, and that's that freedom to be creative in the moment within the structure. You've tried the structured thing. You're still within the structure. You've worked this structure so many times. You know what option A, B, C, D, E, F, G are. You know what they are, right? And you're free to choose from any of them or mix and match them based on, you know, where everyone is. You know where everyone's going to be. You know that the thing you tried to do hasn't worked. So now it's, you go off script, right? You go off piste a little bit, and that's that freedom. So, really good point.
Well then, Paddy, comes on to the next part then. Thank you for that, mate. That's really good. Like, it's amazing. I think we spent half an hour, 4 minutes talking about that 15-second clip. This is going to be some long podcast episodes going out here, but I think it's fascinating to look at it all. And actually not trying to pick up too much is probably the trick here, right? So focusing on something and analyze that rather than look at a 5-minute clip where there's loads of stuff going on and there's just too much. So this has been excellent. I guess if we're going to get to the in some ways, the most important part from this. What would be some of the takeaways do you think that, coaches now, grassroots coaches or academy coaches, but, not, working with younger players, not necessarily elite players or professional players, what kind of principles in here do you think would be important and transcend across? And I guess then after that, we can talk about maybe how you might want to coach some of these things in your hour and a half session, whatever the players a week. But I guess first of all, what are some of the important things that we want to take away as coaches from this kind of clip, in line with the building out from the back or building out from zone one?
So there's nothing earth-shattering about what has happened on, assuming everyone's looking at the screen the same way I am on the right-hand side of the screen, right? It's a line of three, it's really a two and a three, but they've kind of flattened themselves out, carrying the ball out with, and they've been matched up in pressure, right? That's not spectacular or unusual. For me, I think it's recognizing when to jump, when to jump out and support, right? So Pedri dismarking to support there. He's not just gone through the motions. He's not just shown without the intention of getting the ball. He has sprinted like a starter gun has gone off to get that separation. And even with that, he's only managed to generate at the peak 5 yards of space. And it's probably the length of the table I'm sat on right now. It's not massive, right? But for a high level player, that is enough space. So if you have something like this in your game model, right, that sort of jumping to support or dismarking to support, generating space, well, you better do it properly and not just go through the motions of it. Because if he goes any slower, the centre back that jumped with him, he's on top of him and he receives man and ball and the whole thing. Different clip, right? We're looking at a different thing now. So that would be one. I think the recognition, and this is a concept that we teach, right? This is one of the actual concepts that, Grant and I put together, is there's always intentionality behind passing, and the intention is shared here between a passer and the receiver. It's not a random pass and a random movement. It's two things that are connected via the ball, right? So it's intentional, it's relational, it's got to have timing, it's got to have a shared meaning. So that's very important. And I think thirdly, because I could go on all day about this, but if I had to give one thing, it'd probably be the structure. So although you can't see everything on this because it's not a tactical cam view, you can probably see about, I don't know, 18 of the players involved, right? Ish, if I was to count. And you know where the goalkeepers are, and you know where the wingers are that you can't see off camera. Look at how they're pinning. And again, and it just happens to be in my mind, but this presentation I saw from Molina last night talked about pinning to liberate. And I thought, what a phrase, right? We all use it. We use pin, or we use pressure to attract, whatever. Pin to liberate. So you've got the wingers and the forward pinning that back line to liberate those interior players. So the eight and the 10, or the 2 8s, or the 2 10s within that structure. Because without those two players, nothing happens here. If that back line is allowed to push up and sort of generally sit on Pedri, nothing happens here. That ball has to go over the top, right? You're kind of looking at, imagine this is like a sliding doors moment, right? Well, with the structure, that ball gets played short 15 yards. Without it, that right leg still swings, but it's now a ball over the top,
It's a
and it's
running
a
race
foot
in
race
behind,
with
isn't it?
a running race in behind, hoping that the goalkeeper doesn't come up to sweep it up and clean it up. So the structure there, pin to liberate. I love that saying. I'm going to steal it ruthlessly
I already
and
have as
use.
well. So there we go.
Yeah, write it down, Scott. Write it down,
Yes.
mate, so we remember it. Put it on a post-it note or something.
Highlighting.
But highlight it. There you go. Double underline. But For me, it's those three things.
Okay.
The relationism between the passer and the receiver, the mechanics, doing the mechanics correctly, and then the structure of the team all around it. So all around, you've got two fullbacks wide, two wingers wide, a nine high, a goalkeeper deep, and that thins out any real pressure, right? Because the red team, Mallorca, have to cover it to some extent. Even though you can give up a fullback some hit, sometimes you can give up a winger, you still got to be able to react to the whole espacio, the phase or phase space, whatever you want to call it here. And that structure allows the internal game to happen, to evolve. Without it, you get nothing.
Brilliant, Paddy. Okay, so I'm going to put under pressure now then. As we get towards the end of this analysis, and I don't know, like, we've not used your tactical board yet, so don't feel free if you want it, but we don't necessarily, if you don't want it, we can save it for next time. But you might, it depends how best you want to answer this. If I wanted to coach some of these things, now look, again, let's be realistic. You know, if we're working with youth players, and that can be anything from six, I guess, to 16 or under 18s potentially even, but certainly, you know, non-professional players that aren't getting paid necessary to play the game, we need to be realistic about our expectations. But, you know, we there's nothing wrong with aspiring to try and give our kids the best learning opportunity. And you know, if they want to go and play professional one day, show them some stuff. But recognising that we don't play on beautiful Astro pitches with £400 footballs, you know, with world-class players next to us. We're probably on some dodgy 3G somewhere, or a bit of grass, with, you know, with kids that are still learning the game. What are some, how could I coach some of those things in my session if I wanted to get some of this stuff out of my team at the weekend? If I wanted to encourage them to kick the ball more and look after it and build out in, you know, under pressure in certain areas, what kind of things might I want to do, Paddy, to, like, you know, not to suddenly start saying we're playing at Barcelona, but just to plant some of these things that might improve me 5 or 10% in our ability as a team to kind of play out under pressure and find that free person in zone one into zone two?
Yeah, so hopefully no worries. So I might do something like this, Scott. And next time, mate, when we do this, I'll bring some markers and stuff so I can sort of make it more visual for the viewers at home. But I might do something like this. I might go edge of the box right there, up to halfway, something like that. And then I might do, excuse me. So this is a positional game, right? I might do something like this. Where the red team's a focus team, and what you're trying to do is maybe pass into here. You could have, I mean, as I think about it, Scott, you could do it like this. You could have, imagine these are gates here or target players, right?
And maybe Paddy, I'm going to really push, I'm going to really change, mate, make it so awkward for you. The best you can, if you don't mind, I know it's not easy doing this because obviously some people will be listening to it on audio only. If you can explain as much as you can. What you're doing.
Yes.
Just sorry, mate, to make it even harder for you. No, it's, I can see it, obviously. And I hope most people watch the video, but just in case they're not, don't have to go explain everything, but just give a rough picture of what you're setting up and what it might look like, if that's okay.
Of course, mate. No, it's a great point. I've gone full nerd down the
rabbit hole. You're in it. You're in the zone.
I'm in the zone. So basically what we've set up here is one half of a field. This is a positional game. One half of the field, and I've gone the from the goal to the halfway line, and then I've used as the touch lines the 18-yard box and just extended those lines down. So I'm not doing full width. I'm doing half a length and not full width. Sounds like I'm doing my swim badges there. I've got an overload in favor of the focus team, and the focus team is the build-out team here because that's kind of what we were looking at. The build-out team as a goalkeeper here, and they have three targets to play to on the halfway line. Those targets are limited to the width of the 18-yard box, as is everyone, and they can only operate up and down their line. Now, I'm making this up on the fly. This is just whatever came to me. There are going to be tons of improvements. Everyone at home could take this and go, I'm going to rip that up, start again, blah, 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 blah. Have at it. Let us know what you come up with as well, right? Send it in.
I would then organise my team in whatever formation I was in that video. Barcelona, well-known, 4-3-3. So we've got two centre-backs, two full-backs, and a six as our starting point. If we have the numbers, add in two interiors here, if you've got the video, all right? And then as a rival team, I've got them pressing in that triangle that the other team was doing, and I've got two, what you might call double sixes or two tens, sitting in behind. So it's two lines of pressure. One is like a triangle of three winger, two wingers and a forward. Then behind that, you might say there's two tens, a 10 and an eight, or two sixes, however you want to label that. I would then, so there'd be a general macro principle here that we're working on, which is finding the free man in a defensive line to carry the ball out. So what we would ask the team to do is circulate that ball all around, right? Little in and out here, getting it back to eventually off balance the press like that, something like that, right? And that's kind of what happened, not really, but near enough. Then team has to identify the free man in the defensive line, play him there, right? And this is exactly what happened. He carries out. And then what you could do here, you can just try and coach it and hope that it organically happens. Or potentially you could divide this field up into zones and say when you isolate a certain amount of players on this on one side as opposed to the other, X, Y, Z has to happen. But what you're looking for now is obviously you're trying to score by passing into one of these target players. Okay. At some point of carrying, you would hope, and maybe you can incentivize with some conditions or a rule, if it doesn't happen organically, that this player is going to jump. Right, I should move these back into position here. This defender is going to jump and pressure the ball carrying center back. And then what you see is it's not identical to the video, but it's not far off. You've got the internal player here, the six. That's De Jong, wasn't it? You had the center back carrying the ball out. You've got the fullback over here. And then you had Pedri. In fact, that is identical. You have Pedri just sort of dropping off of his defender. So maybe we had another defender. There we go. So maybe now we've got three levels of cover, all right? And maybe he's picking him up because he knows he's pressing, all right? So you've got options there. You've got the fullback can be played, all right? Or you get this player jumping and gets it in there. And then maybe as he gets pressed, the third man comes into play. Or what we wanted to happen in the other one was the third man gets played into as Frankie de Jong here, all right? But remember what we said. This guy, the number 10, Scott, you identified that. He defended that third man so well, he didn't really let go of Frankie de Jong. So when Pedri dropped in, he couldn't play that. But maybe he can play that. If the guy doesn't follow him, he can turn and go, and he can just, you know, now he's got his options to play forward. But I might set up a little positional play game like that. This is not an uncommon game. You will see exceptionally high numbers of player at the professional level. You can see a 9v9 in there, no problem. That's not too tight of a space. I've run this with my teams in the past or something very similar in exactly that space. Because you lose, the bigger you go, you start to lose repetitions. You lose control of it as a coach a little bit. It becomes more the player's game, which is absolutely important on one level. But when you're trying to at least introduce a concept and make a tactical principle or a positional play concept appear with high frequency, the coach does need to rein it in a little bit to get that, to create the conditions that bring about the affordances that create that thing in the first place. So I might do something like this, Scott. So what do we say in the end? We had three pressing, we had two in behind, and then one in behind that. So we actually had three levels of the pressure, and we had four levels of offensive players, right? Two center backs, six with the two fullbacks, the wingers that were the targets, right? They could only go up and down the line, the wingers and the striker, and then the two interiors there. So you've got one, two, three, four versus one, two, three lines of defensive pressure.
Yeah, get sure. I guess, Pat, if you were working with, you know, even younger players and smaller groups again, you know, maybe you're playing seven or nine aside or in five aside. And again, you know, you have to stage it appropriate. No one's asking you under fives to play like Barcelona. But all you would do here, I guess, is take out the players, make it smaller numbers, make the area smaller, but essentially the principles are the same, aren't you? You're looking for the same kind of things, aren't you? You're teaching the kids or exposing the players to the same kind of challenges, just on a smaller scale, right?
Yeah, I was at a Raymond Verheijen course once, and whatever you think of him, he's quite a brash person. He actually threw someone out of the course I was on for asking a question, and I promise you that that's all that happened. He just threw him out. He said,
God.
"I'm not saying another word until you get out." 500 people in this hall. The guy paid like $1,000 to be there or something. He goes, "I'll refund you. Get out." But he did a thing
Wonder ask what the
on that.
question was, jeez.
Do you know what? It wasn't even anything innocuous. It wasn't. It was innocuous. It was nothing. Nothing controversial. I just think he was challenging him. And anyway, he does a thing. He got, you know, the old maths paper you got as a kid with the tiny little squares on it. I'm gonna bastardize it. I won't quite get it right, but he drew out all formations, and he drew out all formations versus those formations, and it's brilliant. And it would take you about 10 pages, right? But he did it. He had all of them. And then what he did was took each one and said, "Right," and he gave it to the coaches. He says, "This is what I want." It was 11v11, so it'd be a 4v3 versus a 4v4. And he go, "Right, now you've got 16 players turn up for practice. Take this 11v11 practice that we've got, which is building out the back, excuse me, and design it now for what did I say, 16 players." And he said the principle is always to have an overload on the have the overload go in the right way. So if you're working on if your focus team is the possessing team, they have to have more numbers. If you're And again, it works. It doesn't always work the other way. Maybe the defensive team, you're trying to put them under high amounts of pressure. Maybe they have less numbers. But he said, you have to get that right yourself, right? That's the art of coaching. But he said, basically, use this math paper and just draw it out. And it's brilliant. And I don't use it now actively, but I did use it when I was designing sessions that I still use now, years ago. And he would basically, you take, you know, you just copy it out on this square paper. And you take this, and this might end up being, Scott, something like well, we kind of did, didn't we, mate? Like, it ended up being an 11v, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We still got three lines of pressure, and he would go, take away the least important one. Well, the least important ones here are probably two centre backs and a goalkeeper, right? And we got rid of them. Did we need a goalkeeper for this? Yeah, it's a build-up exercise. Yeah. Do we need the strikers and wingers? Probably could have sacrificed them and just had the two interiors stepping off. But what you lose then, because you always lose something, is you lose that structure that I was saying about. So this guy now doesn't, he might be worried about this through ball, wouldn't he? He's got to defend this guy here. Well, if you take this guy away, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I can just sit on Pedri. Well, maybe that kills the game a little bit. Maybe that kills what I'm trying to do, both in practice and in the actual game. So if you roll this back to the 11v11 game itself, if my winger is lazy and deep and my strikers are there, well, Pedri doesn't step off that man, does he? He doesn't get away from him because they've invited that pressure in with them. So all things to think about, mate. I think it's when I first started coaching, after a year or two, I was like, I'm gonna have this licked by Christmas. That's like 20 years ago, and I think I'm further away now. You know all those things, mate. I can't remember exactly how the phrase they call it, conscious incompetence, and then it's, you know,
Consciously competent, unconsciously competent, and
right. Well, I didn't know anything at the beginning, and I was unconsciously incompetent. Now I'm consciously incompetent. At least I know that, I'm aware of that, and it gives me somewhere to go.
It's a good space to be. Well, the more you know in football, the less you know, isn't it? Like, that's the thing. It's like the more you realize you don't know stuff. So, Paddy, mate, you've been a star. Look, I thank you so much that we've done an hour. So what we'll do is we'll call it a day on that one. But thank you so much. Look, I know this is our first attempt to try and do something a little bit different. And I'm sure we'll fine tune it and improve it as it goes on. But you've been exceptional, mate. And to cover the topic, to go through a video, picking out just some detail around that, and then to show us how it plays out in practice, and then to bring it into what might be a coaching environment, mate, I think is absolutely brilliant. And I've certainly got things I can take away there that I know I can relate back to the players I work with that are relevant to their age and stage, not Barcelona's, but to theirs, and adapt it according to the things that we think are important in our little environment. So thanks so much. Have you enjoyed it?
I loved it, mate. And like I said, I always learn when I talk to other smart people that know the game better than I do and work in different environments than I do, like working with a U14 team in London. You probably see stuff all day long, every day that I'm just not going to see here. And as we were walking through that, I picked up 3, 4, 5 things that I'm like, I wish I'd had a little notepad with me. Genuinely, I would have. Well, maybe you might have written them down, so maybe we'll compare notes afterwards.
Share the notes. Yeah. But I don't often add value, like, mate, so I'll take that.
I mean, mate, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your backside, but like, I think if more coaches did this, one thing I'll say before I let you go is when I came to America, and this is actually not American coaches, this was English coaches, I found you either had a real expat feeling with English coaches or British coaches, UK coaches, and it was great and it was beers and it was this and it was that, or you got this real exclusionary, is that the right word, environment where they didn't want to let you in on their little island. They didn't want to share contacts, content, coaching advice, how to deal with this, how to deal with that, because they'd worked so hard to get there. They got out of England. A lot of these guys were working class, maybe did, maybe didn't go to university, came over here, and maybe they were former semi-pro or, you know, YTS types, right? Before, yep. Whatever it's called now. And they'd pulled themselves out. They were going to have to go and work in the carpet factory, right? Like, I'm not trying to overgeneralize it and it sounds like they're all Northerners, but do you know what I mean? Like, they'd spent their life doing football. They didn't do their GCSEs. They didn't go that route, didn't get A-levels, weren't fortunate. They were trying to make it, and then they didn't, and they came over here, and they're like, oh, my God, I can get paid X amount of money. I can buy my own house based on football now, which is what I thought I was going to do as a player, and then I had that dream taken away from me. Now I'm doing it as a coach. And they didn't really want to share that, which I can't say I don't understand.
Yeah,
I'm fortunate enough, you know, I'm not reliant on my income. My wife works; she's a professional, you know. So I'm the opposite. I'm like, well, let's go, let's do it together. And I think if there was more stuff like this, I know this is the first one. I'm not trying to like be all Billy big time about it, but I guarantee you this is popular, and I guarantee you it spurs other coaches going, well, I want to do that. I want to talk about something I saw last week as well. And that's what you want me. That's how the community grows and that's how it shares its information. So if we're a tiny, tiny part of that, I feel a bit proud about that. So
all
power to us, mate.
Well, look, Paddy, like, that's exactly it, right? If it gets people talking and thinking and trying to improve, that's what we're all trying to do, isn't it? So on that note, what I'd say is that if there's topics out there that people like you to talk about and analyze and go into detail, please let us know, because if that's okay, Paddy, we'll pick things up from listeners and just work on it. We'll take guests. If not, I've got 1,001 things I want to work with you for anyway. So there's plenty of stuff coming down your road. The intention is to try and get these out relatively regularly. So we'll talk again over the next day or two about what we'll do next and how we'll improve this and make it even better. Get a next topic going down and look out for Deep Dive Episode 2, which will be coming out shortly.
Yeah, 100%. Can't wait. And like, tell your viewers, tell your listeners, if they don't give us topics, then they're leaving it at our discretion. So be warned.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, well, there's plenty to talk about, so I'm sure we'll get something back from people. We always do, so I'm sure we will. So, yeah, please do let us know. And also feedback, right? You know, tell us, you know, constructively, you know, how we can improve on stuff and make this work for everyone, because the more we hear from people, the better we can get it working. So, brilliant. Paddy, thank you so much, mate. Well, look, I'm looking forward to the next one already.
Me too, mate. I'll speak to you soon.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.